Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, February 13th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, President Trump calls on Ilhan Omar to resign, and the health care debate reopens at the state capitol. President Trump says Congresswoman Ilhan Omar's apology for suggesting that members of Congress support Israel because they are being paid to do so was lame and that she should resign. Trump says anti-Semitism has no place in the United States Congress. Omar said she had no intention of offending anyone, including Jewish Americans, when she insinuated that lobbyists were paying lawmakers to support Israel. She has apologized, and she tweeted today that Trump should apologize for the hateful things he has said. DFL Senator Amy Klobuchar says she raised more than $1 million in the 48 hours after she launched her presidential campaign. Her campaign says the money was raised from online and grassroots supporters across the U.S. She's one of the Democrats running for the presidency who has voluntarily released early fundraising figures. California Senator Kamala Harris raised $1.5 million in the 24 hours after her presidential announcement last month. A bill moving at the state capitol would make it illegal for people under 18 to get married in Minnesota. Brianna Biersbach has more.
Kali Herr was a teenager when an older man spotted her at a community event and asked her father for her hand in marriage.
I remember hearing my father say to the caller that he would only entertain the thought of us marrying after I graduated from college. Had my father not been my advocate, my life outcome would have been very different.
Herr is now a freshman DFL state representative. Right now, 16 and 17-year-olds can get married if their parents and a judge approve. Herr's bill would change that. Underage marriages are surprisingly common in the U.S. A Frontline investigation found more than 200,000 in the U.S. between 2000 and 2015. Two states passed similar laws last year. The House Judiciary Committee unanimously approved the bill Tuesday and sent it to the House floor for a vote. Reporting from the Capitol, Brianna Biersbach, NPR News.
Minnesota would end the practice of long probation terms under a bill heard yesterday in a state House committee, Tim Pugmire reports.
Jennifer Schroeder of St. Paul is a college graduate working as an alcohol and drug counselor. She's also serving a 40-year probation for a nonviolent drug crime. Schroeder was at the Capitol to show support for legislation that would set a maximum probation of 5 years for felonies other than murder and sexual assault.
I am 6 years into my probation sentence right now, and I will not be eligible even for early release until 20 years.
DFL Representative Jamie Long of Minneapolis says his bill would address unfair and excessive probation, as well as regional disparities in the length of the terms. The bill has bipartisan support. Tim Pugmire, NPR News at the Capitol.
As we reported yesterday, Governor Tim Walz will continue an appeal of a proposed oil pipeline project that the Dayton administration started last year. It's one of the first contentious decisions he's had to make in the first month of his tenure. The Line 3 replacement pipeline that would cross northern Minnesota has been divisive, and as Dan Crocker reports, Walz has been getting a lot of pressure to take a stand.
Let's start with a quick refresher on Line 3. It's one of five Enbridge Energy pipelines that together carry more than 2.5 million barrels of Canadian oil every day across northern Minnesota. The existing Line 3 pipeline is corroding, and it has a long history of leaks. So Enbridge proposed replacing it with a new line that could carry nearly twice as much oil. And after almost 4 years of review and public meetings and testimony and protests and rallies, last June, the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission approved the new line. But the State Department of Commerce under Governor Dayton appealed that decision. Their experts argued that Enbridge didn't prove that Minnesota needs the pipeline in order to meet the state's demand for oil in the future. Dayton's successor, Governor Tim Walz, agreed to let that appeal continue. In a statement, he said any project like Line 3 that impacts the environment and the economy must follow the process, the law, and the science. But Todd Rothe with the industry and labor group Minnesotans for Line 3 says the project has already gone through the regulatory process, and it's time to build it.
This has been 4 years in the making already. And, you know, again, to have, additional wrenches unexpectedly thrown into it at the 11th hour when, you know, basically we're ready to put shovels in the ground is just, it's ridiculous, to be honest with you.
Walls has been getting pushed hard from both sides about Line 3 since he was elected. Supporters like Rothy say the $2.5 billion project will create thousands of construction jobs and millions in property tax revenue for northern Minnesota counties. But pipeline opponents have also been putting on the pressure. Joe Plummer is attorney for the Red Lake and White Earth Nations, which have filed their own appeal challenging the PUC's approval of Line 3, and he praised Walls' decision.
We had a chance to visit with him on the phone, and we explained to him that by just permitting the process to run its course, which has already been set in place, that he would be fulfilling his responsibility of testing whether or not the PUC's decision is actually correct.
Plummer says the PUC was wrong to allow Line 3 to be built through a big part of northern Minnesota where Native Americans retain treaty rights to hunt, fish, and gather. Opponents also argue that Line 3 threatens the climate. Akilah Sanders-Reed is one of the Youth Climate Interveners, a group that has also appealed the PUC's approval of Line 3. She says the oil transported by Line 3 would exacerbate global warming, something Walls' campaign vowed to fight.
And you can't approve something like that or let something like that move toward construction without doing everything in your power to stop it, and also say that you support climate policy or that you care about climate action.
In his statement, Walls did not take a stand on Line 3 itself. He said simply that he would allow the appeal process to continue. But it's clear Republican legislative leaders plan to make an issue of it.
This was Governor Walls' first test on what one Minnesota means. And in this example, I think very clearly Governor Walls has failed the test.
House Minority Leader Kurt Dowd says Walls sided with, quote, extreme environmentalists.
And I think the fact that he's siding with such a small minority of Minnesotans instead of where most Minnesotans are, believing that this is the safest way to transport oil, that this is the best thing for our state's economy.
While Republicans accused Walls of delaying the project, it's not clear today's announcement would slow things down. Several other groups and tribes are also appealing the PUC's approval of the pipeline, and those appeals would have moved forward either way. But Enbridge can't begin building the new Line 3 until it gets a handful of state and federal permits. The company says it's working with the Walls administration on a schedule for securing those permits and says it still plans to have the pipeline operating by the end of this year. Meanwhile, more appeals are expected. Dan Crocker, NPR News, Duluth.
An opening skirmish in the debate over health costs in Minnesota involves a program used to buy down expensive insurance claims. Lawmakers must decide quickly whether to extend a state-funded program known as reinsurance that delivered short-term results. Critics worry that doing it would reduce pressure on state leaders to find a broader solution. Brian Baxt has more.
A couple years ago, the Minnesota legislature was scrambling to tamp down soaring health insurance rates for people who got coverage on the open market. Lawmakers approved hundreds of millions of dollars in rebates to chop the cost of monthly premiums. Then they set aside another $570 million to reduce risk for insurers. The new reinsurance program had the state pay a large share of medical costs once a policyholder's claims exceeded $50,000 and until the bill hit $250,000.
The fact is, Minnesota's state reinsurance program has worked.
Catherine Commit of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans says insurers were able to hold down premiums the past 2 years because of it.
Everyone in the individual market, everyone, has benefited from lower health insurance premiums as a result of this reinsurance program.
Now her group and others are trying to get lawmakers to extend the program, and they say it has to happen fast. Health plans will submit their proposed 2020 rates to regulators by the end of March. Slightly different bills to renew the program advanced yesterday through committees in the Republican-controlled Senate and Democratic-led House. DFL State Representative Lori Halverson of Eagan says the bill is key to keeping the market stable.
We are about to fall off a cliff if we do not extend it. That cliff will lead to higher insurance premiums in the individual market. It will lead to more Minnesotans being uninsured.
Senate Commerce Committee Chairman Gary Dames of Redwood Falls says it's just a matter of pushing out the expiration date a few years.
This bill, we're not asking for new dollars.
He says there's money left in the fund and other federal assistance coming in. An analysis shows that nearly 1,900 individual claims were covered by the program in the first 9 months of last year, at a total cost of $84 million. Dame says the final 2018 tally could reach as high as $150 million once all affected claims are tallied. Amanda Aturo is a healthcare organizer with Take Action Minnesota.
For the amount of relief that we're giving insurance companies, are we getting enough relief for Minnesotans. The premise behind this bill is that we can't afford not to do this. We're wondering if we can afford to do this.
Take Action is a grassroots group that has become a political force on the left. The Minnesota Nurses Association has also objected to the bill on the grounds that it's a short-term fix to a health cost problem that demands bigger solutions. Dames took issue with characterizations that the program is a giveaway to insurers because money only goes out in response to specific claims.
This is not a padding of the insurance companies. This is directly reducing the cost of the insurance.
But DFL Senator Jeff Hayden of Minneapolis says it's misguided to view the program in isolation. He joined Governor Tim Walz in a call to open up the state-managed Minnesota Care program to more people in places where private insurance options are limited.
They all work together.
Hayden says Republicans could complicate things by letting a 2% tax on medical procedures expire at the end of the year. Walz and Democrats want it maintained.
We work in a healthcare ecosystem that is dependent upon each other in order to work. So if we don't repeal the sunset of the provider tax, then that's a $700 million hole per year that we don't have to pay for health care.
The health care debate will come into clearer focus next week when Walz releases his first budget proposal. He'll have to account for any spending on the reinsurance program, Minnesota Care expansion, or other initiatives that meet his goal of accessible, affordable health care. Brian Baxt, NPR News at the Capitol.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.